Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. My name is Bostic, James Bostic. Good to be here with you. It is a conservative's perspective on Mojo. No, whoa. On this, I got all wrapped around the axle with my James Bond riff. This is a conservative perspective on the Patriot Nation Radio Network because it's Thursday and we are fundamentally live. And that means Patriot Nation Radio here on blogtalkradio.com. Good to be with you. Our guest this evening, and I'm kind of excited about this, hadn't been on in a while. About 3 years ago, I met our guest at a political retreat, a conservative retreat down in Greenville, South Carolina, a thing called Rock the Red. Sean Bradley Wissman was there with Dave Summerall, and these two fellas were part of a team who have done some remarkable groundwork in accessing and viewing and looking at the overall picture of everything that happened on January 6th. And just recently here, a couple of weeks back, another January 6th has come and gone, and we still got a lot of men and women locked up and being mistreated. And we're going to talk a little bit about that tonight. So without any further ado, our friend, a great friend of the program, friend of mine, Sean Bradley Wissman is with us. Sean, welcome back. It is good to have you here with us.
Hey, man, it's great to be here. Always good to talk to you, actually. We haven't spoken enough lately, so I'm really happy to be here.
Well, and I'm happy to have you. January 6th, you were there that day. You were fortunate in some respects that you didn't have the heavy hand fall on your shoulder as it has on a lot of other people. And I know you, right before we got on here, you were talking about you had just basically given a second look at the January 6th Commission's report. And if you would like to share your thoughts on that, we would be tickled to death to hear them.
Yeah, I mean, part of the problem is, and gosh, I've looked at that document so many times to the point where I actually went out and got hard copies. You know, you can only look at a computer so long.
Right.
But I think the biggest glaring issue with the report is that the information in there are crimes of omission. So the reason why you don't get the truth out of it is because they just leave things out most of the time. Now, there's other instances, obviously, Trinis Evans and Condemned USA, which I do work for in a variety of capacities, including, you know, investigation and analysis. But, you know, one of the major things there was that the select committee had actually had a video produced by James Goldston, who's a very well-known producer. And in that video, they showed a video that was taken by another journalist, Sandy Bauckham. And Trinis was reading from one of Trump's tweets at a specific time. Well, they misrepresented that time. They fraudulently inserted a timestamp for 2:28 to make it appear as though Trump somehow caused the crowd to surge with his tweet. And so that's what they point out in that video. And it's just an absolute lie, propaganda at best. And that's really what they've used as the basis for all of this insurrection narrative. It all comes back to the report. And that's the reality therein, is that there are things, there are lies, there's things that are untruths. And then people can get into whether or not some of the witnesses were completely telling the truth to the J6 Select Committee or, you know, but there was no real cross-examination either. So it's just, it's a mountain of problems that was used and built to support a specific narrative. And that was a narrative that was established long before January 6th.
And it's continuing to this day. I can't remember where it was. It came across my feed, most likely American Thinker or Breitbart. They've made the discovery of a number of different files concerning January 6th that have just been shredded. They've been deleted. Nobody knows what's happened to them. I think it was close to 100 files from the committee concerning evidence. Nobody knows where it's at.
Yeah, and that was one thing. I know that the House was looking into that issue, and I guess that's really not that surprising, because if there was information that they had that didn't support their narrative in some way, shape, or form, I mean, why not? Of course, they're going to shred it. I mean, the sad thing about that is, like, worst case scenario, what happens? Well, you say, well, you shredded stuff. Well, what did you shred? Well, no one knows because it's gone. I'm afraid that a lot of the unanswered questions that we have about January 6th, you know, I kind of take a different approach than a lot of people who are, you know, advocating for more sanity, I guess I should say, within the whole thing. But I'm afraid that most of these answers are, we're probably never going to get them. I know that even when we looked at different things going on with clandestine operations, and that's something that I had my nose into from, you know, very early on,
right,
based off of sources that I had within the intelligence community. The reality is that unless the Director of National Intelligence decides to, you know, declassify these portions or any of these clandestine ops that, you know, may or may not have occurred, to use Chris Ray's language, you know, we're not going to get into that, but you know, that's the sad reality, is that unless the Director of National Intelligence decides that the American people get to see this, they're not going to see this. Because for those that don't know, when it comes to those sorts of operations, even the president himself is on a need-to-know basis. So that's why so much out of that kind of shadowy world gets completely relegated to history. You know, maybe 25 or 30 years down the road, you see something come out of it. So that's kind of, I guess, disappointing to people who want all the answers now, and I can have more than one or two minds about that entire sphere, for sure.
Well, and it's no, you know, crap from Kennedy is still classified because these people haven't died yet, and they're waiting for that to happen so they can be free of any consequences beyond a conviction in a court of public opinion. And it's going to be this way too. And it's like you said, we don't know what they shredded because we don't know everything that they had. And now we never will. It reminds me of like the final months of the Second World War, when the Nazis were on the run and they were trying to do away with the immense and overwhelming paper trail from the Holocaust, and where they had killed and eliminated so many Jews and gypsies and other undesirables, or what they consider to be undesirables, throughout Europe. And they got rid of a lot of it. They got rid of a lot of it, but there was enough that remained. There was enough residue in those papers and things that brought, you know, it brought the light truth to it. And I'm sure this is much limited in scale. And I use, you know, and there's no different, you know, there's a lot of difference between the two. But in this similarity, where you've got the people in power trying to get rid of evidence, trying to do away with and destroy evidence that would also indicate their own guilt and complicity in these things, it's no different. And until they decide to release all those things, you're right, we won't ever know. It'll just be guys like me and you speculating with a glimmer of information here and a dot of something else over there, and using inferential logic, putting together the most likely causes of what happened or who was behind it.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what we're looking at. And that's part of the problem too, even within, you know, I guess we could call it the greater journalistic community.
Right.
Is there's so much speculation, and it's just rampant, and it kind of gives me a headache a little bit, because you see just flat out falsehood being circulated on all ends of the political spectrum. I mean, when you've got the left wing and they've come out with these narratives, you know, this insurrection narrative, obviously, you know, they say that everybody who, you know, walked through the building is a domestic terrorist. They treat you like one, and I can definitely attest to that with all the different restrictions on my life right now that hopefully I can get some of them relinquished. But, you know, part of the problem is you have that narrative. And then you also have the other side that I've honestly got to say, if we're being objective and we're looking at people and we're talking about the rule of law, there were some people there who were objectively out of line, who were objectively violent towards police officers and should have been held accountable. And I know I've said this when we've spoken before, but I think that there never would have been any sort of real pushback had they limited the prosecution from the Department of Justice to those who engaged in violence. Then we could have really dug into the details of why violence occurred, perhaps what actually incited them, and got more of the truth there. But because they chose to start going after peaceful protesters, and interestingly enough, on that note, just recently, the U.S. attorney who was in charge of D.C. at the very beginning of this, Michael Sherwin, he's recently come out in the media and said that basically when he started getting directives from Merrick Garland to go after everyone who just even walked into the building, myself included, that's when he basically decided that he was going to find a new job, and he quit. And actually, that does align with a lot of what we've seen, where that's what happened. So again, the Department of Justice really bit off a lot here, but it was, and that's how you almost know that it's political at some point, because why would they do that? It's just the amount of money that goes into it. It takes the FBI's attention away from so many other issues, but they have to push that narrative. I mean, I'm just going to say it. We have an illegitimate president. If we didn't have an illegitimate president, why would they have to push so hard to legitimize him? It just makes no sense, you know. So they have to demonize their opposition. The other thing that I thought was interesting that I did want to touch on, because a lot of people don't realize this, and I've written about it on my website at 1776returns.com, is the role of spies in Ukraine towards the end of World War II, the way we've used right-wing sort of, you know, Nazi groups in that region as a bulwark against Russian influence. And that's where you really get into this weird, strange world of psyops and how they can turn bad on you. I mean, you have double, triple agents. You don't really know who's working for who. And I really think when you look back at the history of the last 70 years, what we've really seen, and I hammer on this quite often, is the ideological subversion that was spoken of by KGB defector Yuri Bezmenov. And that's really what J6 was. J6 was the culmination of so many of those psyops, where they've essentially gotten to the point where the right wing rises up and there's this push to, you know, quote unquote, take back the government, and it leads to balkanization and collapse, which really plays right into the hands of the Russians. So I know that a lot of people have circulated different ideas about there being Ukrainian intelligence assets there, and I actually have, you know, I have very good reason to believe that, including there was a report that was given, an intelligence report that was kicked up U.S. Secret Service and others prior to January 6th, on December 29th of 2020, I believe, I'd have to check my notes to be sure. But in that report, they spoke about a group called the Voroshilov Division, which was coming in. They were bringing weapons and arms into D.C., and they were identified. So they were known assets, meaning that our intelligence agencies were aware of them. They'd worked with them before in some capacity, and that they were aware that they were headed to D.C. And for some reason, beyond what CREW, the Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington, which is the group that's actually suing Trump in all these different places to try to get him off the ballot, beyond that group, nobody really wants to talk about it. And even they were very kind of, they avoid any sort of real discussion there beyond saying that, well, this is proof that it was a white supremacist uprising, you know, or something like that. So I think that that just kind of lends more credence to the idea that there were, what I've said from the very beginning, multiple operations, multiple agendas, multiple players. And it's a very complicated world. We're seeing it play out right now in Texas, in my opinion, too.
And that's something else I want to talk to you about. As most of you know, Governor of Texas, Greg Abbott, finally decided to stand up. Well, better not say that. I didn't mean that. I'm very sorry. The guy's in a wheelchair, and I didn't sound like Joe Biden now. Great. Damn it. Anyway, he decided to own this thing and to confront the federal government, and he issued a proclamation yesterday in accordance with the necessary, the requisite divisions of the Constitution, and declared the state of Texas is under invasion. And it has been, basically from the time that Joe Biden took his hand off the Bible. It's been that way, and after 3 years of taking this, Texas is finally in this standoff with the federal government, and I don't think this is a Fort Sumter moment. I really don't. I don't know that we're going to see Texas National Guardsmen shooting it out with federal agents or anything like that, or at least I certainly hope not, but there is a certain amount of tension that's put in here, and there have been a number of states that have rallied to the side of Texas, my state here, West Virginia, being one of them. And I'm curious to know what you think about what's going on in the Lone Star State.
Yeah, I guess after everything I've learned, after what I observed in the lead up to January 6th, this entire situation makes me nervous. I think that there is a strong possibility of a trap being laid out here. I'm going to flat out say it. I don't trust Abbott at all.
Okay.
Like you say, we've dealt with this now after Biden for 3 years now, and nothing was really done. I mean, obviously they were going through the courts and everything else, but now for there to be this kind of big stand, you have a lot of patriot groups that are headed to the border. I'm now seeing a lot of reports that different militias from around the country are headed to the border. And there's just something about it. I'm going to say it. And it seems like everything that was said and heard before January 6th. And I know it's very easy for people to say, well, we need to do something. And I agree. I mean, I think a lot of these situations are very much like a catch 22, but I would just encourage everybody in this to be wise as serpents and gentle as doves, because there's too many ways that it could go sideways. And I think we have to understand that after everything that we've seen, you can't tell me that the people who control the corrupt Biden administration wouldn't be willing to stage a false flag in order to further frame patriotic Americans as domestic terrorists. So we have to be cognizant of that. And I know that there's a lot of talk of secession in Texas and everything as well. I mean, it is what it is. I don't think that's a tenable idea at all, as good as it sounds. But I would encourage people to really pay attention to what's going on. It's a powder keg.
It is. This is a flashpoint, or the potential of being a flashpoint like I don't think anything we've seen even to this date. It looks good. I mean, in a way. And what I mean by that, Sean, is I guess it's falling in line with what you've said. These patriot groups are coming down, and everybody, we want to guard against romanticizing this kind of thing, because when you get into that, then you fall into the traps like you just mentioned earlier, and it could be a false flag, and it may be, I don't know. Sometimes I think, if we apply Occam's razor, it is fundamentally what we see. And it could be that Abbott is just, you know, he's tired of this. He's had his fill. They have been pursuing it through the courts. And maybe he wants to calculate that if Biden's going to be as weak and pliable with China and Ukraine and our enemies abroad, why would he not, you know, do you see what I'm getting at? Why would he not want to, why would he not want to test the waters here?
I mean, I do. And I know DHS sent out a letter. I think it was yesterday. It may have actually been today. I was looking at it a little earlier, but DHS, their general counsel, sent a letter and told him, you know, that he needed to stand down by tomorrow. And so it kind of sets this. But there was no real consequences laid out or anything like that. And the other thing that people should be aware of is Canaries Blue, if they can find her on Twitter, she's a great lady, really intelligent. But she went through and did an entire thread talking about how there's, you know, kind of some potential for financial benefit for Abbott if there's a crisis at the border. So that's kind of an interesting piece of information that I think people should be aware of. Because, you know, look, when you're talking about, people say, oh, why is this happening? Why is this happening? Well, usually it's money. That's usually the reason why. So if you can find a monetary motive for anybody who's in the position where they're making decisions, it should make you raise your eyebrow a little bit. So I would encourage people to check that out. But, you know, that's part of the problem. As somebody, again, I kind of come back through the lens of everything I've learned on January 6th. And it's very easy, you know, just like it was then, it was like, oh, man, everybody's going to go to the Capitol. You know, there's going to be a sitting in on the lawn. That's what everybody was kind of talking about. And a lot of that was led by various right-wing leaders, and it ended up being an absolute mess. It was an absolute trap, and there's been a lot of people who price for that, and you know, you often wonder for what. So that's all I'm saying to that point there, is that this is another one of those situations. And the other thing people need to be aware of, this is just the reality, is that your Patriot group is, you know, there's a 99% chance that it's infiltrated, either by political opponents. You know, it could be private contractors working, you know, intelligence jobs for, you know, some corporate entity somewhere who has an interest in seeing the American people suffer. You know, we like to throw the term globalists on them, and I think that's relatively appropriate. Right. But everyone's being monitored, everyone's being infiltrated, and, you know, there's bad people out there who want to push people to do silly things that they think are in their own interest. It's like when I mentioned the idea of ideological subversion, to break that down for people. The reality and the effectiveness in psychological warfare of ideological subversion is you essentially get people who are acting in what they believe to be their best interest to actually work towards an end that they don't want. And that's been everything that Russia's done over the course of 70 years. And I think that a lot of that was ramped up even in the past 10 years. Against America. So I think people just need to be aware of that. They need to be cognizant of how their own you know, biases, hopes, wishes, dreams, and everything else can actually be used against them. Because I'll flat out say it, if the United States begins to balkanize, I think it's game over for all of us.
I'm inclined to agree, because if when you look at it, this was the greatest bulwark of liberty and freedom in the history of mankind, and there isn't any place else. When it fails here, you're right. I don't think it's you can't resurrect it.
No, and you have the BRICS axis, you know, Russia, China allied with each other. They're chomping at the bit right now. I mean, China has all of its own problems domestically. They've had some issues with the stock market lately. Russia's got issues as well, but what actually makes those problems a lot better is if the United States collapses. And as we saw, you know, I'll talk about it a little bit more tonight on my show as well, but, you know, this recent move by Putin to go ahead and declare the treaty that made Alaska part of the United States null and void, and they're essentially reclaiming the Russian Empire, that's a pretty bold provocation. And when we have someone as weak and compromised as we do in the White House, you know, that just further, it makes the situation even more dangerous, where it's like I say, if you get too focused on the southern border and everybody's looking at that, we're sending National Guard. I mean, Now, this thing could turn on a dime in more ways than one, considering the geopolitical situation right now.
And I'm inclined to agree with that. And what you're telling me right now about Putin declaring the treaty and the sale null and void.
Yeah.
We live in interesting times. And you're right. We've got a guy. He's an illegitimate president to start out with. He is in the pockets of every third world communist, every bad actor on the planet. He's gained financially from them practically. And I think what we're seeing in a way, and I'm sure you would probably agree, a lot of these folks are looking, I think what we're going to see here is kind of like a quickening of these events between now and the election, because that they know the odds slack against them considerably if Donald Trump is elected again.
Yeah, that's a huge concern of mine, as everybody who follows me knows. You know, I'm not always, you know, sunshine and rainbows when it comes to my assessment of some of the things Donald Trump says or does. But the reality is that, you know, what I've seen on the ground anecdotally, I think what the polls say and everything else, I mean, people are ready for Trump to come back. The country does seem united behind that idea. And so to me, when I look at, if I look at it from the perspective of the powers who are trying to divide and conquer the United States, there's kind of a unique opportunity for them there in that they don't want Donald Trump to get back into the Oval Office. That would obviously not be good for their agenda in the long run. So they've got to say, well, what do we do with it? And the problem is when I start to answer that question, I think about what would actually plunge this country into a civil war would be is if they assassinated Trump and deprived everyone of the ability to vote for the man. That's incredibly concerning to me, and I don't even really like saying it, but I think it has to be said. And again, people need to be aware of how that could be.
Well, no, I agree
them.
With you. That's the elephant in the room when it comes to this stuff, because you and I know, and anybody that's informed on this stuff knows, when it comes to preventing Donald Trump from being president of the United States, nothing is off the table. Somewhere else on my feed, a hot mic picks up a couple of reporters, and I'm doing my air fingers quotes here, joking with one another about the assassination of Trump. And it's little stories like that here and there that are properly placed that tend to normalize that type of thinking. And they may have their guy already picked out, but that doesn't mean that some independent actor doesn't pick up on this and decide that they're going to run with this too.
And let's talk about it. I think that in this era, and even what they've done, it's interesting because when you start talking about putting things into the world, into the consciousness of the public, that's essentially what the January 6th Select Committee report accuses Trump of doing when they talk about him inciting insurrection, right? That, you know, Trump says things, he's boisterous. And because of the mentality of some of the people that followed him, they essentially say, well, that's why they, you know, engaged in insurrection, and that's why he incited it. And it's kind of an interesting view of psychological warfare there as well, where whether Trump meant to or not, I can attest to the fact that there are some people out there who would do crazy things if they felt like he said something. And there's a lot of crazy people in the world, and that kind of gets you into that realm of kind of like MK Ultra mind control and some of that more wild stuff. But that's what concerns me about that, again, is that it's programming, right? They're programming people to get ready for a civil war. They're programming people for this, you know, Texas secession. They're programming all of this stuff until some lunatic comes along who takes it seriously and he acts on it. And then we all get plunged. And again, from a perspective of people who want to do ill to the United States, that's the perfect scenario because there's no paper trail. Now it's like,
exactly.
They don't even have to burn those documents.
No, they just got to inspire
it's incredibly concerning.
Yeah. Well, man, listen, we're down to the bottom of the hour, Sean, and I know you've got a show you've got to get ready for. Number one, I appreciate tremendously you coming back on and being generous with your time. And number two, where can we get some more of Sean Bradford?
Well, probably the best place sometimes, but I'm pretty shadow banned. So even if you follow me, you might not see anything I put up there, or I might make you mad too. You never know. But you can find me at Shawn Witzman, S-H-A-W-N-W-I-T-Z-E-M-A-N-N. Or you can find the American Council for Truth and Journalism on Rumble and Twitter at the ACTJ. Or sometimes I still write at 1776returns.com.
Thanks again, Sean. Appreciate it. I know you've got work you've got to go do, and I'm going to let you go do it. It's not going to be so far and in between next time you and I talk. Thank you once again, ladies and gentlemen. Shawn Witzman with us. Great talking with you, Sean. Good luck on your program tonight.
Yes, sir. Thanks for having me on again.
Ah, terrific guy. Terrific guy. All right, we're going to take a brief break, and I'm going to reload and figure out what we're going to talk about next. You're listening to A Conservative's Perspective right here on the Patriot Nation. I almost did it again. Right here on the Patriot Nation Radio Network. We'll be back in a minute. All right. James Bostic here, Conservative Perspective on the Patriot Nation Radio Network. Patriot Nation. If you're not listening, you should be. You know why? Some of the very best in libertarian and conservative talk radio out there, patriotnationradio.com. Okay. Man, that was some great stuff with old Sean. I forgot how much I enjoyed talking with him. It's been such a long time. That was a sharp guy. Let me see what we got in the pocket. Oh, yeah. Well, you know what? I'll tell you what let's do. Let's go ahead. I'm going to go ahead and read the letter. I want to read this letter. Sean and I were talking about it yesterday. Texas Governor Greg Abbott releases a statement. I've declared an invasion under Article 1, Sections 10, Clause 3 to invoke Texas constitutional authority to defend and protect itself. And here is that statement. The federal government has broken the compact between the United States and the states. The executive branch of the United States has a constitutional duty to enforce laws protecting states, including immigration laws on the books right now. President Biden has refused to enforce those laws and has even violated them. The result is that he has smashed records for illegal immigration. Despite having been put on notice in a series of letters, one of which I delivered to him by hand, President Biden has ignored Texas' demands that he perform his constitutional duties. Talking point one. President Biden has violated his oath to faithfully execute immigration laws enacted by Congress. Instead of prosecuting immigrants for the federal crime of illegal entry, President Biden has sent his lawyers into federal courts to sue Texas for taking action to secure the border. President Biden has instructed his agencies to ignore federal statutes that mandate the detention of illegal immigrants. The effect is to illegally allow their en masse parole into the United States. By wasting taxpayer dollars to tear open Texas border security infrastructure, President Biden has enticed illegal immigrants away from the 28 legal entry points along this state's southern border. Bridges where nobody drowns and into the dangerous waters of the Rio Grande. Under President Biden's lawless border policies, more than 6 million illegal immigrants have crossed our southern border in just 3 years. That is more than the population of 33 different states in this country. This illegal refusal to protect the states has inflicted unprecedented harm on the people all across the United States. James Madison, Alexander Hamilton, and the other visionaries who wrote the United States Constitution foresaw that states should not be left to the mercy of a lawless president who does nothing to stop external threats like cartels smuggling millions of illegal immigrants across the border. That's why the framers included both Article 4, Section 4, which promises that the federal government shall protect each state against invasion, and Article 1, Section 10, Clause 3, which acknowledges the state's sovereign interest in protecting their borders. And the case that was cited was Arizona versus United States, with Justice Scalia dissenting. The failure of the Biden administration to fulfill the duties imposed by Article 4, Section 4, has triggered Article 1, Section 10, Clause 3, which reserves to this state the right of self-defense. For these reasons, I have already declared an invasion under Article 1, Section 10, Clause 3, to invoke Texas' constitutional authority to defend and protect itself. That authority is the supreme law of the land and supersedes any federal statutes to the contrary. The Texas National Guard, the Texas Department of Public Safety, and other Texas personnel are acting on that authority as well as state law to secure the Texas border. Signed, Greg Abbott, Governor of Texas. That is a statement, as brief as it was, it probably only took about 3 or 4 minutes for me to read the whole thing. That statement, that letter there by Governor Greg Abbott, is filled with a great deal of pitch and moment. And this is a pretty tense time on the Texas border. I'm not exactly sure how this is going to play out. Sean seems to be pretty worried about it, and I'm going to defer to his good judgment. And the thing is, and what we've got to watch is the provocation. All these things are set up, these abuses, this long train of abuses by the federal government. Yeah, go ahead and look that phrase up. I think you know where you'll find it. This long train of abuses by the federal government is designed for one reason, and it is to provoke a response, a violent response. From us, from folks like you and me. Now, what happens if that should come to pass, if that violent response that the federal government, that the Biden government, the Biden people lust after so heavily from us, what do you think will happen? Yes, of course. Crackdowns. Further depriving of liberties. The ordered liberties that the fathers bequeathed, the founding fathers bequeathed to us. Something else I want to share. We're going to move on because that's kind of a heavy thing. And what do we got? Oh, I got about 14, 15 minutes. I don't want to be so heavy with that, but I do want, I do want to share this with you. DEI, you guys know what that is. That's diversify something. Diversify, equalize, and investigate. I don't know what the hell. Diversify something in inclusion. So anyway, in keeping with the new woke bullshit, all right, in keeping with the new woke bullshit initiative, there's no B or S in any of that DEI thing, but that's what we're going to call it. The Federal Aviation Administration and I'm not making this up. You can go to their website. The Federal Aviation Administration is actively recruiting workers who suffer from severe intellectual disabilities, psychiatric disorders, and various other mental and physical conditions. The FAA's own website states targeted disabilities are those disabilities that the federal government, as a matter of policy, has identified for special emphasis in recruitment and hiring. Let me read that to you again, and no, I did not make that up because you guys think I lie about some of this crap anyway. Targeted disabilities are those disabilities that the federal government, as a matter of policy, has identified for special emphasis in recruitment and hiring, okay? In other words, they're going to give you a little extra juice if you come in there with something wrong with you. And I don't mean just something wrong, like, oh, I got a trick knee, or I have to have glasses because I have a little trouble reading small print. No, I mean something wrong with you. These disabilities include hearing disabilities, vision disabilities, missing extremities, partial paralysis, hell, complete paralysis, epilepsy, severe intellectual disability, psychiatric disability, and dwarfism. And I'm going to read that again. The disabilities that the federal government is looking for in their prospective federal aviation air traffic controllers include hearing and vision problems, missing extremities, partial paralysis, complete paralysis, epilepsy, severe intellectual disability, psychiatric disability, and dwarfism. Now, of all those things, the easiest fix is dwarfism. A couple of thick books. Okay, get this guy in a chair where he can see the radar screen. I don't have a problem. I don't have a problem with a dwarf. Ray Charles as a ground air traffic controller? Yeah, I have a problem with that. But Doc or Grumpy or Sneezy? No, I don't have a problem with those guys. Get them a chair that fits and get them, yeah. And if you go to the FAA's website, notice that in the next column, right beside the FAA statements of its hiring for priorities, is a job ad for an aviation safety inspector. A blind, somewhat deaf, partially paralyzed, epileptic, schizophrenic dwarf. My God, man, you'll be head of this organization in 6 weeks. The website also points out that diversity is integral to achieving the FAA's mission of ensuring safe and efficient travel across our border and beyond. No. Diversity is integral to achieving the FAA's mission of meeting self-imposed diversity requirements. Nothing against those people who have physical or mental impediments and challenges, but there is no possible way that, say, air traffic controllers with severe intellectual disabilities, complete paralysis, and hearing and vision impairments are going to foster safe and efficient travel anywhere except to heaven. Okay, it would be like the Army recruiting guys with no legs for the infantry. Guys with no legs who can't see really well. How long do you think it's going to be before the Oakland Raiders start hiring guys that only have one leg or are in a wheelchair or are schizophrenics in order to increase their odds of winning the Super Bowl? Even though they probably have a lot of those guys on their roster already because, again, it's the Raiders. So, Jesus wept, people. I don't want to fly anywhere unless I'm flying the plane. Apparently, I can't trust anybody. Well, Dave Brown. He was the guy that took me up and let me fly his airplane. It was a Stearman Cadet, man. What an experience. Anyway, but honestly, how many generations has it been said and said reliably that statistically air travel is the safest mode of travel in the United States? Can't say it much anymore, I'll tell you that. Oh, my God. Anyway, and that wasn't really what I wanted to talk about. Here's the one I want to talk about. And this is the guys that get me all the time. CBS, and you know who these cats are. They're in the press. They're in the news business. They're in the college business. And, God, do I hate college. Yeah, whatever. CBS political reporter Catherine Watson took to X, the social media formerly known as Twitter, to wonder whether it would be a bad thing, again, the air fingers quote, a bad thing if humans became extinct. And she tweeted this post. Why do people work so hard just to continue the human race in apocalypse movies when the world is falling apart? Is it really all that bad if we as a species cease to exist? I'm sorry, stupidity chokes me. As well as venality and vapidity. And here's the thing, and this is always the way it goes. all these people so coldly and so logically talk about how much better off the world would be if there were so many fewer people. We could just have something happen where we kill off a bunch of people. I mean a bunch of them. And then everything would be all right, see, because there'd be more resources for the folks left. And that's just, you know, it's just natural. That's how we people in the college faculty lounges talk. But it's just like those peckerwoods that always scream up and down that when a president is elected that they don't like, they're by God leaving the country. And they never do. They never do. They say they're going to. How many times is that idiot Whoopi Goldberg or Alec, who's the one that killed his pal? Alec Baldwin. He's the one that shot his friend and lied and said he didn't, but he did. Single action revolver can only be fired one way, and that's by pulling the trigger. And that's what you did, Alec, you lying, murderous son of a bitch. But anyway, these guys always say that. They say they're going to leave. And it's always these academics and these self-insistent reporter types who think they know oh so much more than you and I. And they point out these things because it's trendy or it's the popular conventional groupthink in academics, the academic elites. But you'll never notice that after making a statement like that, do you ever see any of them go, and to prove to you my level of commitment to this idea, and then they pull out a pistol and they blow their brains out. Never. They don't drive off a cliff. They don't overdose on drugs. They don't drown themselves. They don't drink poison. They don't take a rope and throw it over a rafter. Nothing. They go to their jobs the next day and they collect their paycheck and they just go on regurgitating that academic elitist bullshit. God, I hate college people. Oh, Jesus. So, when you ask them directly, look how much time I got, a couple minutes. When you ask them directly about this, and you say, well, you know, you guys just hate humanity, and they go, oh, no, we don't. That's silly. What would make you ever on earth think that we hate humanity? That's just so untrue. Well, let's see. Let's start off with your love of unfettered abortion and medically assisted dying, maybe. Or maybe the fact that you're strongly supportive of transgender procedures that render the patient permanently sterile, that you wish to shut down the farms that feed people and think that the best thing for the planet and weather would for there to be far, far, far fewer humans. Or apparently, as who is this bubblehead? Catherine Watson says, none. Take the jump, Katie. Take the jump, honey. We will be right behind you. I promise. But they never do. They never do. My father and my mom and my brother, and to a lesser extent myself, we're all in the education business. We all have, between us, we have at least 100 years or better, more than 100 years in the education business between my mom and dad, my brother and myself. And I graduated, I got my associate's degree from a junior college, a little two-year junior college that flourished in the town that I grew up in. It was called Beckley College. I went there, my brother Bernie went there, my mom went there, my dad went there. We took our associate's degrees and we went to other places and we got other degrees, you know. But it was a great stepping off point for a lot of young men and women in this community who decided that a college education was going to be their ticket. Colleges no longer fit that bill anymore. Colleges have become a bastion of left-wing groupthink and these empty-headed, numb skulls full of mush who leave high school in Greenbrier County or in Podunk, USA, and go to a major liberal arts college. They think these people are telling them the truth. They think these people aren't lying to them. They think they're learning. They're learning what to think. They're not learning how to think. And the things that they're learning to think as accepted are horrible, toxic, cancerous things when it comes to the future prosperity and security of this country and its citizenry. And that's, you know what? We got a couple of minutes left, and I think I'm just going to go ahead and knock off a little bit early this evening. Thank you so much for the opportunity. We're doing it here. We're coming back alive, kind of, here Thursday, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Blog Talk Radio, that's where you go, blogtalkradio.com, and you type in Patriot Nation, and you'll find my show. You'll also find Kevin White program. And he's always got outstanding guests and top flight subjects that he's talking about with people who are well qualified and know what they speak. 90 seconds left. Thank you so much, Penelope. We have a Sunday version, recorded incarnation of the program, a conservative perspective on the Mojo 5. Now I get to say it, Mojo 5-0 radio network. Mojo 5-0. If you aren't listening, you should be. The very best in libertarian and conservative talk radio, Mojo50.com. That's how we do it every Sunday, but it's 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We appreciate you going on over there and give us a listen. Thank you so much once again for the opportunity to hang out with you and talk to you. Special thanks once again to our friend Sean Bradley. Won't be near as long next time, Sean. Always a great conversation with you, my friend. That's it. That's all we got. Thank you so much. We will see you next Thursday, taking a look at things as we do through a conservative's perspective. In the meantime, God bless you. God bless America. We'll see you then.